Hey everybody, welcome, welcome, glad that you are here. Good to see you all this morning. Especially I want to say hello to my new fan, Rico. If you've been following the comments, I'm looking forward to all the things he's going to tell me about today's live stream, about how wrong I am. And so, hey, have a great day, brother. All right, so, you know, I stress all the time that we are to not read the Bible as a systematic theology. There's another error that we often commit, and so those who come from a, you know, Reformed camp especially tend to read through that systematic lens. But then there's a whole other group of people, group of Christians, that are taught basically, you know, I'm supposed to find out what this passage means to me, right? And this is where so many of our devotional books come from. They quote a couple of verses, and then you get a two or three paragraphs from somebody, and you just sit and meditate and pray, and what does this verse mean to me? That's not how the Bible's written. What have I been telling you all along? The Bible is a story. That's a true story. I don't want to give the impression that it's fiction. It's a true story. But it's a story, especially the Old Testament. But it's true the New Testament as well. So, think about where we've been. God brings this people, a nation of millions probably. He leads them out of Egypt to this mountain, and he calls the leader, the mediator between him and this people, Moses, and he says, "Moses, go tell them this." And he enters into a covenant with this nation, a contract, and they both signed the contract. It is a done deal. Israel has a pact with God, Yahweh. Yahweh has a pact with Israel, and we looked extensively yesterday at the terms, or at least the 10 words are the terms. We looked extensively at the consequences. Remember the first part of chapter 28 of Deuteronomy? Unparalleled temporal earthly prosperity and blessing if they obey. On the flip side, unparalleled devastation and destruction if they disobey. So in the story, see, we're not supposed to approach this and say, "Oh, what do I learn about the character of God here?" That's not the point. I know for some of you coming from the backgrounds that you come from, because I came from the background, that's a blasphemous statement. What do you mean? The whole Bible is to reveal God. No, it's not. Not the way we typically think of it. In the story, there's one question we should be asking. God makes a covenant with Israel, enters into this agreement, and gives them tremendous consequences based on whether or not they obey. What is the question? If you're reading this like any other story, what's the one question at the top of your mind? God's made this agreement. If you obey, you get these blessings. If you disobey, you get these curses. What is the question we should be asking? What is it we should be looking for through the rest of the story? What is it? Somebody tell me. Yeah, Rob, exactly. Did they obey or not? What happened? Did they obey and receive all this prosperity and abundance? Or did they disobey and receive all the destruction? That's how you read a story. Well, if you continue the story, oh, there it goes. Sorry, I'm having some just out of nowhere problems between my monitor, my laptop. Anyway, so I can't see your comments at the moment, so I'll get to the other screen manually here to get your comments as time goes on. But for now, I can't see what you're saying, so I apologize. Anyway, if you read the rest of the story, you'll see that for a very short period of time, maybe a couple little periods, Israel obeyed, for instance, under David's kingship. And God blessed them, and David conquered all of his enemies. But most of the history of Israel is their breaking the covenant. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to read some sections. Jeremiah, he was a prophet, and he wrote a lot. It's fascinating life that he lived, experiences that he had. And he's right at the end, right in the midst of Israel's idolatry and rebellion against God and breaking the covenant. And I want you to see what God said through Jeremiah to his people. This is how we're supposed to read the Bible. Jeremiah 2. Oh, I need to see. Are you seeing that? Man, this is very frustrating. Bear with me. I have to do this so that you can see what I want you to see. Technology is so wonderful when it works, and it is so frustrating when it doesn't. All right, now you're seeing it. There you go. Now you're seeing what you should see, right? Okay. It doesn't do me any good to ask you if you're seeing what you should see, because I can't see your comment at the moment. All right. Jeremiah 2:20. If you can't see this, just listen, like all the people who are on podcasts. Because there are a bunch of you that never see what's on the screen anyway. All right, here's Jeremiah, or God through Jeremiah. Indeed, long ago you threw off my authority. See that? Long ago, God says, you threw off my authority and refused to be subject to me. You said, I will not serve you. Instead, you gave yourself to other gods on every high hill and under every green tree, like a prostitute sprawls out before her lovers. You see how God's comparing their idolatry to the whore who just gives herself to every man under every tree anywhere? I planted you in the land like a special vine of the very best stock. Why in the world have you turned into something like a wild vine that produces rotten, foul-smelling grapes? You can try to wash away your guilt with a strong detergent. You can use as much soap as you want. But the stain of your guilt is there for me to see, says the Sovereign Lord. How can you say, I have not made myself unclean? I have not paid allegiance to the gods called Baal? Just look at the way you've behaved in the Valley of Hinnom. This is where they sacrifice children, by the way. This place, Valley of Hinnom, becomes Gehenna, which is usually translated in the New Testament, hell. It doesn't mean a place of eternal damnation. It's the place where they committed these atrocities, and it became the place of refuse burning and so on. Think about the things you have done there. You are like a flighty young female camel that rushes here and there, crisscrossing its path. You're like a wild female donkey brought up in the wilderness. In her lust, she sniffs the wind to get the scent of a male. No one can hold her back when she is in heat. None of the males need wear themselves out chasing after her. At mating time, she is easy to find. You people are going after false gods, like a wild donkey in heat. Do not chase after other gods until your shoes wear out and your throats become dry. But you say, it is useless for you to try and stop me because I love those foreign gods and want to pursue them. Just as a thief has to suffer dishonor when he is caught, so the people of Israel will suffer dishonor for what they have done. So will their kings and officials, their priests and their prophets. They say to a wooden idol, you are my father. They say to a stone image, you gave birth to me. Yes, they have turned away from me instead of turning to me. Yet when they are in trouble, they say, come save us. But where are the gods you made for yourselves? Let them save you when you are in trouble. The sad fact is that you have as many gods as you have towns, Judah. What was the first commandment? You shall have no other gods before me. A first line item in the contract. No other gods. By Jeremiah's day, which is roughly 900 years after the signing of the contract, God says, you have as many gods as you have towns. Why do you try to refute me? All of you have rebelled against me, says the Lord. It did no good for me to punish your people. They did not respond to such correction. You slaughtered your prophets like a voracious lion. Remember, Jesus talks about this, how they treated the prophets. You people of this generation, listen to the Lord's message. Have I been like a wilderness to you, Israel? Have I been like a dark and dangerous land to you? No. Why then do you say, we are free to wander? We will not come to you anymore. Does a young woman forget to put on her jewels? Do you know young women who forget to put on their jewelry? Does a bride forget to put on her bridal attire? You ever been to a wedding where the bride forgot her wedding dress? Of course not. But my people have forgotten me for more days than can be counted. My, how good you have become at chasing after your lovers. Why, you could even teach prostitutes a thing or two. Even your clothes are stained with the lifeblood of the poor who had not done anything wrong. You did not catch them breaking into your homes. Yet in spite of all these things you have done, you say, I have not done anything wrong. So the Lord cannot really be angry with me anymore. But watch out. I will bring down judgment on you because you say, I've not committed any sin. Why do you constantly go about changing your political allegiances? You will get no help from Egypt, just as you got no help from Assyria. Moreover, you will come away from Egypt with your hands covering your faces in sorrow and shame, because the Lord will not allow your reliance on them to be successful, and you will not gain any help from them. Okay, now this part, pay attention here. If a man divorces his wife and she leaves him and becomes another man's wife, he may not take her back again. That's right out of the law in Deuteronomy. If a man divorces his wife and she leaves him and is joined to another man and she leaves him, the original husband cannot take her back. That was forbidden in the law. Doing that would utterly defile the land. But you, Israel, have given yourself as a prostitute to many gods, so what makes you think you can return to me? What's the assumption in that statement? Again, I can't see your comments at the moment. Look at the hilltops and consider this. Where have you not been ravished? You waited for those gods like a thief lying in wait in the wilderness. You defiled the land by your wicked prostitution to other gods. That is why the rains have been withheld and the spring rains have not come. Yet in spite of this, you are obstinate as a prostitute. You refuse to be ashamed of what you have done. By the way, just got to say, in our day when the world is making so light of fornication and adultery and prostitution, we can't give up pointing out the evil of those things. In God's eyes, it's evil, and it loses the point of the illustration here. Anyway. Even now you say to me, you are my father. You've been my faithful companion ever since I was young. You will not always be angry with me, will you? You will not be mad at me forever, will you? This is what you say, but you continually do all the evil you can. When Josiah was king of Judah, the Lord said to me, Jeremiah, you have no doubt seen what wayward Israel has done. You have seen how she went up to every high hill and under every green tree to give herself like a prostitute to other gods. Yet even after she had done all that, I thought that she might come back to me. But she did not. her sister, unfaithful Judah, saw what she did. She also saw that because of wayward Israel's adulterous worship of other gods, I sent her away and gave her divorce papers. Do you see that? God is saying, I divorced Israel. Let that sink in to your thinking. All right, could go on, but I want to go to another passage now. A little bit later in Jeremiah 11, the Lord said to Jeremiah, hear the terms of the covenant I made with Israel and pass them on to the people of Judah and the citizens of Jerusalem. Right? So he's reminding them of the covenant terms. Tell them that the Lord, the God of Israel, says, anyone who does not keep the terms of the covenant will be under a curse. Those are their terms that I charged your ancestors to keep when I was brought them out of Egypt, that place that was like an iron smelting furnace. I said at that time, obey me and carry out the terms of the covenant exactly as I commanded you. If you do, you will be my people and I will be your God. Then I will keep the promise I swore on oath to your ancestors to give them a land flowing with milk and honey. That is the very land that you still live in today. And I, Jeremiah says, I responded, amen, let it be so, Lord. The Lord said to me, announce all the following words in the towns of Judah and the streets of Jerusalem. Listen to the terms of my covenant with you and carry them out. For I solemnly warned your ancestors to obey me. I warned them again and again, ever since I delivered them out of Egypt until this very day. But they did not listen to me or pay attention to me. Each one of them followed the stubborn inclinations of his own wicked heart. So I brought on them all the punishments threatened in the covenant because they did not carry out its terms as I commanded them. So this is skipping down to verse 11. I say, I will soon bring disaster on them that they will not be able to escape. When they cry out to me for help, I will not listen. So God says, I've been punishing them all along the way. And then I show them mercy. But now I'm about to bring the big one. I'm going to wipe them out. Jeremiah 52, verse 3. What follows is a record of what happened to Jerusalem and Judah because of the Lord's anger when he drove them out of his sight. Zedekiah rebelled against the king of Babylon. King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon came against Jerusalem with his whole army and set up camp outside. They built siege ramps all around it. Remember we talked about this in Deuteronomy 28? He says, I will bring this nation around and they will encamp around you and they will siege the city such that you can't get supplies, you can't get food, you can't get water, you are stuck in the city. And all Nebuchadnezzar has to do is wait. He doesn't actually have to fight them. They can have all their weapons prepared, and if any of the Israelites come out of the city, well, now they're easy pickings, right? They just sit there and wait and wait and wait until they starve to death or give up or whatever. He arrived on the 10th day of the 10th month in the 9th year of Zedekiah, that he ruled over Judah. The city remained under siege until Zedekiah's 11th year. So that's a couple years, right? By the 9th day of the 4th month, the famine in the city was so severe the residents had no food. They broke through the city walls, and all the soldiers tried to escape. They left the city during the night. They went through the gate between the two walls that is near the king's garden. The Babylonians had the city surrounded. Then they headed for the Rift Valley. But the Babylonian army chased after the king. They caught up with Zedekiah in the plains of Jericho, and his entire army deserted him. They captured him, brought him up to the king of Babylon at Riblah in the territory of Hamath, and he passed sentence there. The king of Babylon had Zedekiah's sons put to death while Zedekiah was forced to watch. He had all the nobles of Judah put to death there at Riblah. He had Zedekiah's eyes put out and had him bound in chains. Then the king of Babylon had him led off to Babylon, and he was imprisoned there until the day he died. On the 10th day of the 5th month, in the 19th year of King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon, Nebuzaradan, the captain of the royal guard who served the king of Babylon, arrived in Jerusalem. He burned down the Lord's temple. This temple that Solomon built, that they all marveled at, burned to the ground. He burned down the royal palace and all the houses in Jerusalem, including every large house. The whole Babylonian army that came with the captain of the royal guard tore down the walls that surrounded Jerusalem. He took into exile some of the poor, the rest of the people who remained in the city, those who had deserted to the king of Babylon, and the rest of the craftsmen. He left some behind of some of the poor and gave them fields and vineyards. And then he took all of the temple utensils, the pots, the shovels, the trimming shears, the basins, the pans, the bronze utensils used by the priest, all of these things they took. You know what's interesting that's not mentioned here? Side note. Where's the Ark of the Covenant? We never hear from it again. All right. So let me switch back over here. Just what in the world? Okay, this is so weird. I'm trying to... All right, I can't see your comments at all. Why can I see? Oh, maybe this is why. All right, there's a... Okay, let's see if this works for a minute. I'm not quite done, but I want to just check and see. The regulations and subsequent blessings or curses are clearly laid out if they look at you. Sorry, Amy, I was right in the middle of your comment, and, I do not understand. Do you plan to discuss what binds an individual to the new covenant? Yes, we'll get there and look at the new covenant. So Dale points out the 10 northern tribes. Yes. What's the significance of that? Are you suggesting that something is different with the southern tribes? Oh, no. Have I lost you? I'm distracted here by all the technical difficulties. Oh, it looks like I'm still going. Okay. So remember again the terms of the covenant and the consequences and such. Now I want to read. Have you read Lamentations lately? Lamentations is basically Jeremiah lamenting that Israel broke the covenant and God's destroyed them. It's sad, and it's supposed to be. This is chapter 2. Alas, the Lord has covered daughter Zion with his anger. He has thrown down the splendor of Israel from heaven to earth. He did not protect his temple when he displayed his anger. The Lord destroyed mercilessly all the homes of Jacob's descendants. In his anger, he tore down the fortified cities of not just Israel, but Judah. He knocked to the ground and humiliated the kingdom and its rulers. So the northern kingdom, Israel, fell in 722. This is 586. So they're both gone now. They're both devastated. In fierce anger, he destroyed the army of Israel. He withdrew his right hand as the enemy attacked. He was like a raging fire in the land of Jacob. It consumed everything around it. He prepared his bow like an enemy. This is God preparing his bow like an enemy against his own people. His right hand was ready to shoot. Like a foe, he killed everyone, even our strong young men. He has poured out his anger like fire on the tent of daughter Zion. The Lord, like an enemy, destroyed Israel. He destroyed all her palaces. He ruined her fortified cities. He made everyone in daughter Judah mourn and lament. Now, I just read to you who actually burned down the cities and the palaces? Babylon, Nebuchadnezzar, or Nebuzaradan. But God was behind that. He destroyed his temple as if it were a vineyard. He destroyed his appointed meeting place. The Lord has made those in Zion forget both the festivals and the Sabbaths. In his fierce anger, he has spurned both king and priest. The Lord rejected his altar and abhorred his temple. He handed over to the enemy Jerusalem's palace walls. The enemy shouted in the Lord's temple as if it were a feast day. These pagans are having a great time in the Lord's temple. The Lord was determined to tear down daughter Zion's wall. He prepared to knock it down. He did not withdraw his hand from destroying. He made the ramparts and fortified walls lament. Together they mourned their ruin. Her city gates have fallen to the ground. He smashed to bits the bars that lock her gates. Her king and princes were taken into exile. There is no more guidance available. As for her prophets, they no longer receive a vision from the Lord. The elders of daughter Zion sit on the ground in silence. They have thrown dirt on their heads. They've dressed in sackcloth. Jerusalem's young women stare down at the ground. Jeremiah says, "My eyes are worn out from weeping." This is why he's called the weeping prophet. "My stomach is in knots. My heart is poured out on the ground due to the destruction of my helpless people. Children and infants faint in the town squares. Children say to their mothers, 'Where are food and drink?' They faint like a wounded warrior in the city squares. They die slowly in their mother's arms. With what can I equate you? To what can I compare you, O daughter Jerusalem? To what can I liken you so that I might comfort you, O virgin daughter Zion? Your wound is as deep as the sea. Who can heal you? Your prophets saw visions for you that were worthless whitewash." Remember elsewhere in Jeremiah, and I think this occurs in Isaiah too, but here in Jeremiah especially, they kept saying, "We have the temple of the Lord, the temple of the Lord, the temple of the Lord." They kept saying, "Peace, peace. We are God's people. We have his law. He's not going to let anything happen to us." And God sent the prophets to say, "You keep saying the temple of the Lord, temple of the Lord. No, the temple will not save you because you're wicked. You keep saying peace, peace when there is no peace. You're leading the people astray with your lies." Do you think it's accidental, this word whitewash? "They failed to expose your sin and to restore your fortunes. They saw oracles for you that were worthless lies. All who passed by on the road clapped their hands to mock you. They sneered and shook their heads at the daughter of Zion. 'Ha! Is this a city they called the perfection of beauty, the source of joy of the whole earth?' All your enemies gloated over you. They sneered and gnashed their teeth." You should remember the context of that statement. Weeping and gnashing of teeth. When you read the New Testament using that same terminology, maybe it's not talking about in the New Testament what you think it is. They said, "We have destroyed her. Ha, we have waited a long time for this day. We have lived to see it. The Lord has done what he planned. He has fulfilled his promise that he threatened long ago." Do you see why I keep stressing? People who just assume that God's promises are always for good are not reading the Bible. Those who say that God made these promises to Israel, so there's got to be this fulfillment someday. No, God promised all based on their law keeping. And he promised if they broke the law, he would destroy them. And that's what Jeremiah is saying here. He has fulfilled his promise that he promised long ago. He's overthrown you without mercy. He has enabled the enemy to gloat over you. He has exalted your adversary's power. "Cry out from your heart to the Lord, O wall of daughter Zion. Make your tears flow like a river all day and all night long. Do not rest. Do not let your tears stop. Get up, cry out in the night when the night watches start. Pour out your heart like water before the face of the Lord. Lift up your hands to him for your children's lives. They are fainting from hunger at every street corner." Jeremiah is pleading with them to repent. Look, O Lord, consider, whom have you ever afflicted like this? Should women eat their offspring, their healthy infants? See, that's happening. Just as God said it would in Deuteronomy 28. Should priest and prophet be killed in the Lord's sanctuary? The young boys and old men lie dead on the ground in the streets. My young women and my young men have fallen by the sword. You killed them when you were angry. You slaughtered them without mercy. As if it were a feast day, you call enemies to terrify me on every side. On the day of the Lord's anger, no one escaped or survived. My enemy has finished off those healthy infants whom I bore and raised. I'm going to read a little bit more from chapter 4. Alas, gold has lost its luster. Pure gold loses value. Jewels are scattered on every street corner. The precious sons of Zion were worth their weight in gold. Alas, but now they are treated like broken clay pots made by a potter. Even the jackals nurse their young at their breast, but my people are cruel like ostriches in the wilderness. The infant's young tongue sticks to the roof of its mouth due to thirst. Little children beg for bread, but no one gives them even a morsel. Those who once feasted on delicacies are now starving to death in the streets. Those who grew up wearing expensive clothes are now dying amid garbage. The punishment of my people exceeds that of Sodom, which was overthrown in a moment with no one to help her. Our consecrated ones were brighter than snow, whiter than milk, their bodies more ruddy than corals, their hair like lapis lazuli. Now their appearance is darker than soot. They are not recognized in the streets. Their skin has shriveled on their bones. It is dried up like tree bark. Those who die by the sword are better off than those who die of hunger. Those who waste away, struck down from the lack of food. The hands of tender-hearted women cooked their own children who became their food when my people were destroyed. The Lord fully vented his wrath. He poured out his anger. He started a fire in Zion. It consumed her foundations. Neither the kings of the earth nor the people of the lands ever thought that the enemy or foe could enter the gates of Jerusalem. But it happened due to the sins of her prophets and the iniquity of her priests, who poured out in her midst the blood of the righteous. And on and on and on it goes. I think I will I'll just stop there for now. Do you see it? The answer we started with. Did they keep the covenant? No. And God brought the disaster in graphic, accurate fulfillment. I saw one comment that someone made there. I think it was Lewis. So we're going to see next week, there is another storyline that begins to appear through all of this. We cannot miss the storyline that we've already seen. And we must be careful not to make assumptions because we know the other storyline. In the midst of this, the covenant that does not bend, the covenant terms that are laid out, the consequences are laid out, that's all true. But then another storyline appears, also in Jeremiah. All through Jeremiah, we've got the statements of the broken covenant, and we see this. Indeed, a time is coming, says the Lord, when I will make a new covenant with the people of Israel and Judah. Now, just think that through for a minute. I sign a contract with you, and you break the terms of the contract. So I'm taking you to court and I'm suing you to enforce the terms of the contract. And while all that's happening, I say, I'm going to make another covenant with you. I'm going to make a new one. My saying that, what does that do to the first contract? It doesn't eliminate it. It doesn't mean I'm not going to enforce the first one. But it does make the first covenant obsolete, which is exactly what Hebrews 8 says happened. As soon as God here in Jeremiah 31 says, I will make a new covenant, the other one became obsolete. Now, obsoletion is not terminated. Something that is obsolete is on its way to ending, but it's not ending. Not yet. So here, as God is about to bring about the consequences of the old covenant, he adds a new storyline. I will make a new covenant with the people of Israel and Judah. It will not be like the old covenant that I made with their ancestors when I delivered them from Egypt, for they violated, the Hebrew word is broke, that covenant, even though I was like a faithful husband to them. I will make a new covenant with the whole nation of Israel after I plant them back in the land. And we will talk much more about the terms of that new covenant. I just want you to see the storyline as given, because it is crucial to read this the way it's presented. All right, let me see if I can get enough. All right, well, sorry, my technology is just, I don't know what's happening here. And this happened before, and I, oh, there we go. No, that's not it. Anyway, I'm going to call it a day there. Hopefully this will fix itself for something tomorrow. We will do our Freeform Friday tomorrow and be back on Monday with more New Covenant Theology. Have a great day. Grace and peace to you.